Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. You remember yesterday's weather? The steady rain, the winds that whipped up, the dropping temperatures. It was kind of nasty out. Well, forget about yesterday's weather. We're going to spend the next few minutes looking back at the weather 100 years ago this week. Michael Schumacher, how nasty was it then?
There was like a great deal of snow that came with this. On land, it was unbelievable. You know, cities were being buried. The winds varied, as they do in storms, between 30 and 100 miles an hour. And it lasted for extremely a long period of time, the duration.
In fact, the storm was so bad, people considered it a freshwater hurricane. Dozens of ships, huge freighters, sunk or were stranded on the shore, and more than 250 sailors lost their lives as the storm raged across the Great Lakes. Schumacher's new book, November's Fury, looks back at that destructive storm. He joins us on the line from his home in Kenosha. Thanks again for being with us.
I've always enjoyed being on the show. This is a good one, and I appreciate the interest in the book and the chance to talk about it.
I think we can grasp what a really bad storm on the Great Lakes might be like just from our experience here, you know, high winds, heavy snow, or even heavy rainfall. But what were the waves like on the Great Lakes during this storm?
Depends on who you're talking to. But there's very little doubt the waves on the lake were between 30, 35 feet for the better portion of the duration of the storm. One captain reported a 70-foot wave, like a rogue wave and so forth. The simplest way to put it is that without a doubt, the captains on the lake swore this was by far the worst ever in the history of the lakes. What does that mean in terms of force? It's hard to imagine this, but in his book, Sebastian Junger, A Perfect Storm, talked about a wave about 10 feet high, 50 feet long, traveling at 32 miles per hour, generates 2 million pounds of pressure. Now, the waves that were on the lake at that time were much, much larger than that, much, much longer than that. And the pressure it put on these boats, when one of these slammed into it, in some cases, it literally stripped away the entire pilot house. Tore these boats up into nothing. The ones that sank on Lake Huron, which was hit the hardest, these boats, the ones that were found, were all upside down, indicating that it was very likely they would just bowled over. And we're not talking about small vessels here. We're talking about huge vessels. One vessel, the Carruthers, was so new. It was only its third time out. And this particular boat had been given every kind of reinforcement and safety feature imaginable, and it just plain disappeared. It's never been seen.
There was a precursor to today's National Weather Service that existed in those days. What was their forecast for the lakes leading up to the storm?
Well, the Weather Bureau, as it was called, which was based out of Washington, D.C., forecast storms. This is one of the things that a lot of the captains of the companies afterwards accused them of not projecting a storm. They indeed did, and they projected those storms in 113 different stations or ports around the Great Lakes. They projected gale force winds. Their biggest problem with it was predicting the wind direction. Velocity is always hard to project, but the direction. And in this particular storm, the wind changed direction just almost continuously. It was one of those things that captains that had experience out in the lakes had no way of preparing themselves for. It would be out of the northeast, then all of a sudden it was the north, then it was the northeast, then the northwest. And there was no way to hide from this storm if you were out in it. In other words, the captain will try to get in the lee of a storm to keep the boat safe from some of these mountainous waves that come up, and that wind direction was the indicator of where you should be on the lake at that point, if you can, or how you should seek shelter. Here, there was no way of knowing. A boat, and one in particular, the Sheetal, took shelter in Pie Island in the northern part of Lake Superior, and was perfectly protected until it wasn't, so to speak. it was in this little area. It dropped an anchor. It was going to wait out the storm, and it was fine until the wind shifted direction, and they found themselves in a terrible situation where the waves were coming at them from a different direction. They were building, and they had to get out of there for their own safety. So the weather was so hard for the Weather Bureau to predict that they just couldn't get it done.
And the agency wasn't necessarily believed by the shipping industry anyway. You write that the shipping industry kind of took these forecasts with a grain of salt.
You're absolutely right. They ridiculed them largely. You know, it was like, what do they know? Captains took pride in their shipping records in storms. They understood weather. There were some captains out in the lake that understood the weather probably as well as anybody that was dealing with it. But in this particular case, they got caught where their experience didn't help. In other words, it usually took a day or two for a storm to blow through the Great Lakes. In this case, it was 4 days. The storm hit the two upper Great Lakes, Superior and Michigan, and wreaked havoc on these two lakes, sinking some boats, grounding a number of other ones, and then it seemed to settle down. It seemed like nothing was going on. The captains on the lower lake thought, oh, okay, it blew itself out, and out they went, but they were wrong. A storm out of the southeast joined the storm that was causing all this other trouble in a tremendous system centered right over Lake Huron. And anybody out on Huron was doomed. One boat that was out on Lake Huron traveling up the length of the lake made it through without either being grounded or sunk or so heavily damaged they had to turn back.
So then it sounds like if there was any one single most common error made by ship captains in this case, it was in leaving port at all.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And it should be noted that the enormous percentage of ships, majority of ships, stayed in. Some captains, they like to call themselves the heavy weather captains. They got big, powerful boats that they feel all the confidence in the world in, and they have no issue traveling in storms. And which is what brought down a number of the boats in that particular storm. And another anniversary that we have coming up, the Edmund Fitzgerald. Same thing. It was one of the biggest, toughest, most modern boats in the business, and it just got beaten, you know, to death, literally, by this storm. Captains have faith in their boats when perhaps they shouldn't. And also the communications. When you talked about the Weather Bureau before, there was ship-to-ship and ship-to-shore communications that were available in those days, but nobody wanted them. The owners of the boats didn't want to invest the money. The captains and their crews didn't like the idea of having a situation where the shipping company could be kind of watching their movements and, you know, they were being spied on, essentially. So why is this important? There was one fleet, the Shenango fleet, that had a bunch of boats that were all state-of-the-art, the best safety features you can imagine, plus all were equipped with this communications equipment. Not a single one went out. Not a single one was damaged. I think that's significant.
It's also interesting. I mean, you write about this confluence of factors that did in these ships, the high winds, the enormous waves, anchors that wouldn't catch. But there were also not really a lot of people in a position to rescue ships in trouble either, were there?
No. No. There's one picture in the book of the port of our life-saving station. And, you know, you see it before the storm, and then you see it after the storm, and it's been reduced to rubble. The weather was so intense that the life-saving efforts were doomed. They couldn't get out there on the water to even help these people.
Well, and in the end, what was the tally of people killed and boats lost?
They're not certain of a number. And the reason for that is that they didn't keep good records of crew lists back then. They have them. They know that more than 250 men died in this storm, which is by far the largest tally for a single storm in history. there have been greater losses when a big boat would go down, and, you know, in some cases, hundreds of people would die if, you know, a passenger ship is the one that went down in the Chicago River was. But in terms of a storm, there had never been this kind of devastation, loss of human life and property, before or since.
And it was something like two dozen ships sunk or grounded, right?
Yeah, it was actually more than that. Even it was probably close. Again, I don't know the exact figure, but I want to say in the neighborhood of 38 boats either sank or were heavily damaged, grounded. Maybe the most amazing statistic to me was 8 boats. Now we're talking about big ones, you know. 8 boats went down in like a 5-hour period on Lake Huron. They know because when the victims were washed ashore, they saw what their watches were. And they would see, well, the Wexford sank at such and such a time and so forth, because their watches stopped. Mm. And this is really just a totally amazing statistic to me, that many in that short a period of time. It tells you just how unbelievably intense that storm was. This was down toward the bottom of Lake Huron, and there were some boats that actually survived it. I tell the story of the Sheetal, which is a boat that just the captain decided that his best chance was to stay out in the storm rather than to try to find safe harbor and turn it into an exercise of rolling the ship. And he nevertheless took his chances of being hit broadside by the waves, and he did. He got beat up very badly. But he managed to last out the storm just sailing in it. Another story about this 18-year-old wheelsman, third wheelsman, on board this ship. His captain is running out of lake. You know, they're down at the bottom of Lake Huron, and they're being blown south. And the captain was kind of indecisive about what to do. And the kid just took the matters into his own hands, made a wild turn with the boat, and ran it right up on shore and saved everybody on board the ship. It was heroic. I think it's also significant that not a single soul in a shipwreck, in a boat that was lost, not a single soul survived. It was lost with all hands in every single instance. The number of people got on lifeboats and so forth, none of them made it. In fact, some lifeboats were found where the people, you know, the sailors, had literally tied themselves into the boats. They've tried everything to stay afloat in this. They did, but they died of hypothermia. So it was devastating.
And just a truly remarkable set of stories you tell in this. Michael Schumacher, thank you so much for flashing us back 100 years to this really amazing and devastating time in Great Lakes history.
It was really my pleasure. As you can see, once you get started, you can talk and talk about it because there were so many different boats. And I tried to get as many stories, and human stories, as possible.
Well, you really bring it alive, I have to say.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Michael Schumacher's new book is called November's Fury, The Deadly Great Lakes Hurricane of 1913, published by the University of Minnesota Press. He joined us by phone from Kenosha. Some suggestions for polishing up your resume from one of the state's only certified master resume writers when we return with Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio.